Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. This morning we are commemorating White Lotus Day, which officially occurs on May 8th, when Theosophists around the world take a pause in their work of promulgating the teachings of HPB and William Q. Judge to think about the life and the work, the sacrifice, the mission, great objects that wondrous soul known to the world through H.P. Blavatsky. She passed away on May 8th, 1891. And it is perhaps at the end of a life that we get the greatest appreciation of the work and the mission and the life of the being. It is said in the teachings that at the end of the soul's period of rest in Devakan, the after-death state, has a vision of the outlines, sketches, as it were, of the life that will come. We don't see all the details of that life. We certainly don't know the fullness of the mind and heart of that soul. And so we're going to begin today with a biographical sketch, leaving it up to the individuals, the students themselves, to fill in the details by their own independent study. But in that sketch, it will be enough for us to grasp her life and work. So we'll begin with her early formative years, because we will see shadows there, presentments of the mature woman who was to be the agent who would bring the ancient teachings of the wisdom religion forward into modern times. Polina Petrovna Blavatsky was born in Ekaterinoslav, Ukraine, between July 30th and July 31st, depending on which calendar you use, in the year of 1831. She was born into a noble family of the Hans, who were connected with and descended from the earliest rulers of Russia. It is interesting to note that the personage who was to help bring forth the living light of the truth of the ancient wisdom religion into modern times was born into conditions of widespread death, darkness, chaos, and superstition. At that time, the plague of cholera left a trail of desolation and death across Russia, so much so that the family decided to have an immediate baptism of the frail child under the rites of the Greek Orthodox Church. According to the ritual, all the family members held a lit candle. A young child, one of HPB's relatives, holding a lit candle, became very tired at the effort of standing and sank to the floor. Subsequently, the robes of the officiating priest caught fire, and as the fire spread, many were injured by the flames. According to a prevailing superstition in Russia at that time, persons at that time of the year born between August 30th and August 31st were believed to have unique powers and virtues. In fact, many directly observed to her to have been endowed with remarkable psychic powers from childhood. The personage, a woman who would eventually challenge the dogmatic and conventional thinking of the science and religion of her day, and the social conventions and prejudices, civilizations, grew up from an early age.
I'm getting washed up.
Grew up from an early age with a demonstration of a strong will determined to challenge the restraints of social conventionalities. She played among and befriended the household servants and serfs. She rode any horse in a man's saddle, spent a long time with her father, with his regiment in the field. Upon a dare from her female friends, noting her strong-headed temperament, that she could not make the elderly general and statesman Nikifor Blavatsky marry her, she declared that she would. And sure enough, he did propose, and his proposal was accepted. That was in 1848. Now, at that time in Russia, according to law, the engagement once announced could not be undone. So they were married, but the marriage was never consummated. In fact, she very quickly, abruptly left the house and never saw him again, keeping only his name. We might then enter into the preparatory years of her life and work. For the next 10 years, from 1848 to 1858, she traveled throughout many lands, often alone, Europe, the Middle East, North and South America, and India. During that period, while in London, she met and saw her master in the flesh for the first time in 1851. And she had recognized him because he had appeared to her in visions during her childhood. She returned to Russia in 1858, where many close friends and acquaintances noticed a remarkable increase in her psychic powers. She later wrote that it was during this time that she was learning to fully understand and control her psychic powers. She spent another 10 years, having left Russia, traveling around the world, again with much time spent in India. As she would later tell William Q. Judge, during this time she was preparing herself to find, quote, the men and women whom she would prepare for the work of a great philosophical and ethical movement, which she expected to start at a later time. And so we come to the third part of this biographical sketch, her mission. And although she wrote many articles and letters to people all over the world, it seems as though her efforts in terms of time and output were focused in three major centers around the world: America, India, and England, Europe. She arrived in New York City July 7th, 1873. In 1874, she met Colonel Olcott at the Eddy Farmhouse in Vermont. There was a lot of spiritualistic activity. centering around the phenomena of the Fox sisters. And later that year, in 1874, she met William Q. Judge in New York City, where she was living at Irving Place. On September 8th, 1875, together with these two individuals, the Theosophical Society was founded and eventually officially inaugurated on November 17th, 1875. In the fall of 1877, she published Isis Unveiled to aid, as she said, the cause and objects of the Theosophical Society. She left the United States for India in 1878 to further the movement there. In 1879, she launched her first magazine, The Theosophist, resulting in a rapid growth of the movement in India. And in these articles, many of the articles that she wrote there gave forth the basic teachings of the philosophy of theosophy. In 1887, she established in residence, while she was in India, she established the headquarters for the International Theosophical Society in Adyar, Madras, finally leaving India for good in 1885. She moved to England, and in 1887, she established in residence in London and founded the Blavatsky Lodge. Also in 1887, she launched her second magazine, Lucifer, the Lightbringer. And in these series of articles and publications, she further expressed the teachings of theosophy, especially in light of the prevailing dogmas, religious and science and otherwise, that were present at the time. In 1888, she wrote The Secret Doctrine, or rather we might say The Secret Doctrine was published, the synthesis of science, religion, and philosophy, which she dedicated to those who had called it forth. For them, it was written. In 1889, while in London, she continued to write, and another two of her major works were published, The Key to Theosophy and The Voice of the Silence. In 1890, she established the European headquarters in London. So having well established in writing, in intention, in force, and even in organizational means, the Theosophical Society. She passed from her body on May 8th, 1891, which shortly after became known as White Lotus Day, a day, as we said, where theosophists all over the world since then pause to express their gratitude and appreciation for her mission and work and teachings that she put forth. In keeping with her wishes and the meaning of this commemoration, we will now have three readings from her favorite devotional works, Voice of the Silence, the Bhagavad Gita, and the Light of Asia. Following this, there will be a talk, H.P. Blavatsky and Theosophy, and by the end of the meeting, we'll have some time left over for an opportunity for those who wish to share one of their favorite quotes of HPB's with all of us. Unmute, please.
From The Voice of the Silence. Of teachers, there are many. The master soul is one, Alea, the universal soul. Live in that master and its ray in thee. Live in thy fellows as they live in it. Before thou standest on the threshold of the path, before thou crossest the foremost gate, that thou hast to merge the two into one and sacrifice the personal to self impersonal, and thus destroy the path between the two, antaskarana. Thou hast to be prepared to answer Dharma, the stern law, whose voice will ask thee at thy first, at thy initial step, hast thou complied with all the rules, O thou of lofty hopes? Hast thou attuned thy heart and mind to the great mind and heart of all mankind? For as the sacred river's roaring voice, whereby all nature sounds are echoed back, so must the heart of him who in the stream would enter thrill in response to every sigh and thought of all that lives and breathes. Remember, thou that fightest for man's liberation, each failure is success, and each sincere attempt wins its reward in time. The holy germs that sprout and grow unseen in the disciple's soul, their stalks wax strong at each new trial. They bend like reeds, but never break, nor can they ever be lost. But when the hour has struck, they blossom forth. The seeds of wisdom cannot sprout and grow in airless space. To live and reap experience, the mind needs breadth and depth, and points to draw it towards the diamond soul. Seek not those points in Maya's realm, but soar beyond illusions. Search the eternal and the changeless Sat, mistrusting fancy's false suggestions. For mind is like a mirror. It gathers dust while it reflects. It needs the gentle breezes of soul wisdom to brush away the dust of our illusions. Seek, O beginner, blend thy mind and soul. The Dharma of the eye is the embodiment of the external and non-existing. The Dharma of the heart is the embodiment of Bodhi, the permanent and everlasting.
Excerpts from the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna, what, O Keshava, is the description of that wise and devoted man who is fixed in contemplation and confirmed in spiritual knowledge? Does he move and act like other men? Krishna, a man is said to be confirmed in spiritual knowledge when he forsaketh every desire which entereth into his heart, and of himself is happy and content in the self through the self. His mind is undisturbed in adversity. He is happy and contented in prosperity, and he is a stranger to anxiety, fear, and anger. True wisdom of a spiritual kind is freedom from self-esteem, hypocrisy, and injury to others. It is patience, sincerity, respect for spiritual instructors, purity, firmness, self-restraint, dispassion for objects of sense, freedom from pride, and a meditation upon birth, death, decay, sickness, and error. It is an exemption from self-identifying attachment for children, wife, and household, and a constant, unwavering steadiness of heart upon the arrival of every event, whether favorable or unfavorable, is a resolute continuance in the study of Adiatma, the superior spirit, and a meditation upon the end of the acquirement of the knowledge of truth. This is called wisdom or spiritual knowledge. fearlessness, sincerity, assiduity and devotion, generosity, self-restraint, piety and almsgiving, study, mortification and rectitude, harmlessness, veracity and freedom from anger, resignation, equanimity, and not speaking of the faults of others, universal compassion, modesty, and mildness, patience, power, fortitude, and purity, discretion, dignity, unrevengefulness, and freedom from conceit. These are the marks of him whose virtues are of a godlike character. What is night to those who are unenlightened is as day to his gaze. What seems as day is known to him as night, the night of ignorance. Such is the self-governed sage.
From the Light of Asia. Pray not, the darkness will not brighten. Ask not from the silence, for it cannot speak. Vex not your mournful minds with pious pains. Ah, brothers, sisters, seek not from the helpless gods by gift and hymn, nor bribe with blood, nor feed with fruit and cakes. Within yourselves, deliverance must be sought. Each man his prison makes. Who toiled a slave may come anew a prince, for gentle worthiness and merit won. Who ruled a king may wander earth in rags, for things done and undone. Higher than Indra's, ye may lift your lot, and sink it lower than the worm or gnat. The end of many myriad lives is this, the end of myriads that. Only while turns this wheel invisible, no pause, no peace, no staying place can be. Who mounts will fall, who falls may mount. Thy spokes go round unceasingly. If ye lay bound upon the wheel of change, and no way were of breaking from the chain, the heart of boundless being is a curse, the soul of things fell pain. Ye are not bound, the soul of things is sweet. The heart of being is celestial rest. Stronger than woe is will. That which was good doth pass to better best. I, Bood, who wept with all my brother's tears, whose heart was broken by a whole world's woe, laugh and I'm glad, for there is liberty. Ho, ye who suffer, know. Ye suffer from yourselves. None else compels. None other holds you that ye live and die and whirl upon the wheel and hug and kiss its spokes of agony, its tire of tears, its nave of nothingness. Behold, I show you truth. Lower than hell, higher than heaven, outside the utmost stars, farther than Brahm doth dwell, before beginning and without an end, a space eternal, as surety sure, is fixed a power divine which moves to good, only its laws endure.
So here we are this morning, gathered in the Philadelphia United Lodge of Theosophists, 132 years, just a brief drop in the bucket of eternity since HPB left the physical plane. This commemoration has continued for 132 years, and in fact, this year is expanded even through the use of Zoom to an international White Lotus Day as well. Around the world this week, minds and hearts will focus on the fundamental concepts of theosophy embodied in those readings that she herself designated for this day. From the voice, we see traces of the universality of life, the first fundamental proposition. From the Gita, we see traces of the development of cycles, cause and effect, periodicity, karma, reincarnation. And from the light of Asia, we see traces of the third fundamental proposition of theosophy, the notions of evolution and what develops across many, many incarnations. In an article penned by Mr. Judge, HPB is quoted as saying this. The article is entitled, "She Being Dead Yet Speaketh." Blavatsky was quoted as saying, "Follow the path I show, the masters that are behind, and do not follow me or my path." The word path for her, my path, was in all capital letters. She said in a quotation cited in the same article that there are always two persons in one, two persons in HPB, as in each of us. But she admonished that she was aware of those two individualized consciousness, whereas we are not. So we gather today mindful of the gratitude exhibited in that historic biography of H.P. Blavatsky, but not to idealize or idolize that incarnation of the soul known as H.P. Blavatsky, but rather to seek the truth expressed in that incarnation and to go on to create and sustain the truth as she would have us do. We can only imagine the lives, the sustained efforts that the soul we know as H.P. Blavatsky created and endured in the last 18 million years. Blavatsky was like a highly refined light bulb, totally self-invented, gathering skandhas and elements to be on the ready for service. She was capable of glowing forth with the electricity of theosophy to shed light on the world and to its inhabitants. Seen as or measured as a heroine, a leader, a reformer, a humanitarian, a genius, she was ultimately the consummate student, the consummate high chela of a guru parampara chain that endures through all eternity from the dark night of time until this day and beyond. She was at once real, and that makes it exciting and historical for each of us, but she was also the ideal of a greatly spiritually evolved, involved entity. It is said in the philosophy that death is merely a change of location for the ego, a short period of rest, if needed, before cycling back to the density of this plane and this theosophical movement. Death cannot keep HPB from theosophy or from us. Ever powerful, rising above all prejudicial conditions of the last quarter of the 19th century, this powerful soul clearly led a life of altruism based on the knowledge of true philosophy. The impulse she started reverberates today in the efforts of all volunteers who sustain the Theosophical movement, offering freely to labor to keep her publications available freely to all seekers for the benefit of each and all. Blavatsky would have us remember that the many publications left behind that are truly our companions in this effort are merely the harvested bouquets of theosophy, of divine wisdom. She would remind us that nothing was original to her, other than the powerful, selfless effort to pen what she had learned, to translate into modern languages needed for the struggles around the globe from 1875 and beyond. To sustain that struggle around the globe to free the mind, to free humanity. Her intent was to elevate the great race of which we are all part. Her methods were to deal with the mind of the century as she found it, and to plant the seeds for those who would come after. We who now have amazing technology, beyond the typewriter she would have loved to have had. Computers, the internet, Zoom, cell phones, these are all our means of communicating theosophy with the mind of the century as we find it, and to continue to plant the seeds of theosophy in the furtherance of the Theosophical movement. As individuals, we can look back at the three original objects that she used to establish the Theosophical Society, and we find embedded in those manifest statements the three fundamental propositions of the philosophy of theosophy. Her first objective was to establish the nucleus of universal brotherhood without any distinctions. And what do we see as the underpinning of that? But the theosophical fundamental concept that from the absolute unknowable, from that one tremendous source of all, from that principle, that energy, from that one source, is derived universal brotherhood, universal oneness behind all of manifestation. In her second objective, she promoted the study of ancient literature, religions, and sciences. And we see there the reflection of the knowledge and the supreme wisdom of the periodicity, the cycles, the processes of growth with which humanity unfolds. So if we can look closer to the original source of divine wisdom, of theosophy, we will see in cycles across the duration of time all of the wisdom that we need to find, we need to renew within in order to lead lives of service that echoes that which was laid down by Blavatsky. In her third objective, the study of occult forces in nature and psychical powers latent in man, we see again the underpinning of that third fundamental proposition of theosophy, the evolution of being from beingness to being to everlasting becoming, from within to without. And we see again that re-echoing, if you will, that reassertion of the oneness of not only great nature, but all of the kingdoms of nature and of man as well. We're reminded of the pivotal doctrine that is the responsibility for each of us. So her work to arouse the intuitive perceptions, to align the outer creature of the day to the internal beingness of the eternal spirit that is in each human, that was her great cause, to be an effort, a link in the chain of all workers across the Guru Parampara chain to work for the Theosophical movement. And she admonished us at every turn to place the ethics of Theosophy high and above any psychic laws and facts we may become aware of. The efforts of the modern day student volunteers is centered on creating individual paths, individual expressions of the nucleus of universal brotherhood, glowing as so many stars in the sky. No matter how dimly we are as light bulbs, we can shine forth the electricity of Theosophy, the power of the Theosophical movement. She advised us that the divine ethereal forces need human agents or vehicles to manifest, to make it all real, to exemplarize the eternal truths. It was a task for each people of ASCII to prepare the West, the mind and the soul of the West, to arm the West with timeless ethics and principles that have been preserved in the East. And it is now ours to preserve, to perpetuate, to work as companions to the effort, to bloom wherever we find ourselves situated, and to be very, very aware of the lessons of the life of Blavatsky. It's not Blavatsky, the form or the personality or the incarnation. It's the spiritual entity within that is the rich field of exploration for the study of Theosophy, for the movement known as the Theosophical movement. It is for each of us to examine her many publications and to conquer the power of all illusions and conditions, to look beyond the conventions of her century and ours, to develop the power of intuition as best we can in the moment, as she would have us do, to create and to become our own path, follow her guidelines, but to be generative in our own. So to rise above the conditioned existence of this incarnation moment by moment, in the light of the philosophy of Theosophy, that wonderful culmination of timeless wisdom, philosophy, religion, science. We know that she left certain guidelines, and again, I'm citing information in essence from the article, She Being Dead Yet Speaketh. She reminded us that morals have a basis in law and effect. That moral law is natural law. That evolution leads to righteousness. That there is a fundamental identification possible for all souls with the Oversoul. And that this fact will help us overcome any moral contagion of psychism that might arise. She reminded us that this is not based on sentiment and would not have us be sentimental this morning. But she supported a methodical scientific study, a reverence for the development of wisdom throughout all of the ages. And why? So that we may be better able to exemplify justice, mercy, and love. So she would also remind us that as we pledge ourselves to echo, however dimly we can, her last incarnation, that there is a four pillars upon which any pledge or promise can be established. Absolute sincerity, unflinching determination, unselfishness of purpose, and above all, the use of moral power. As the voice of the silence stated, something that she recorded from memory, but again, she was not the originator, but rather she was the collector of that bouquet of wonderful eternal wisdom. Give up thy life if thou wouldst live. In other words, rise above the conditions of the incarnation so that spiritually we can be vital, potent, and of service to our fellow humans, to the great kingdoms of nature, to great nature, to Master's cause, to the Dionys beyond. And so we have that manifestation of theosophy as traced in the life of H.P. Blavatsky. We gather this morning as her will would have us do. And we're reminded that as her expression of theosophy is one among thousands in the last 18 million years, we know that we, however humble our efforts, can maintain that expression, can expand that expression, so that the minds of the century in which we live, the seeking minds, the open hearts, can find this eternal truth and use it for service as well. Now, we've left ample time at this point in the program for each of us to do a reading of our favorite HPB quotation. And we'd like to start off with the telephone number known as 43530. FC, are you there? You have to unmute, please. Can the host unmute? Telephone number 3530. No? Okay. That particular student sent her submission in. Oh, here she comes.
Hello.
Thank you. Could you please read your quote?
Thank you. This reading is from H.P. Blavatsky's Book of Quotations for May 5th. This reading can also be found in Isis Unveiled, Volume 2, page 216. As cycle succeeded cycle, and one nation after another came upon the world stage to play its brief part in the majestic drama of human life, each new people evolved from ancestral traditions, its own religion, giving it a local color and stamping it with its individual characteristics. While each of these religions had its distinguishing traits by which, were there no other archaic vestiges, the physical and psychological status of its creators could be estimated, all preserved a common likeness to one prototype. Parent cult was none other than the primitive wisdom religion.
Thank you. What a humble phrase, the primitive wisdom religion. Theosophy Hall, I saw a hand there.
This is from the Voice of the Silence. Mind is like a mirror. It gathers dust while it reflects. It needs the gentle breezes of soul wisdom to brush away the dust of our illusions. Seek, O beginner, to blend thy mind and soul. And that's on page 28 in the Voice of the Silence. And there's also another hand in Theosophy Hall.
This is from the Key to Theosophy on 232. If the action of one reacts on the lives of all, and this is the true scientific idea, then it is only by all men becoming brothers and all women sisters, and by all practicing in their daily lives true brotherhood and true sisterhood, that the real human solidarity, which lies at the root of the elevation of the race, can ever be attained.
Thank you. MDW?
This quote is taken from the fourth message to the American Theosophist of 1891. Indulge us, it's a little long, but it's quite appropriate. Your position as the forerunners of the sixth subrace of the fifth root race has its own special perils as well as its special advantages. Psychism, with all its allurements and all its dangers, is necessarily developing among you, and you must beware lest the psychic outruns the monastic and spiritual development. Psychic capacities held perfectly under control, checked and directed by the monastic principle, are valuable aids in development. But these capacities running riot, controlling instead of controlled, using instead of being used, lead the student into the most dangerous delusions and the certainty of moral destruction. Watch, therefore, carefully this development. Inevitable in your race an evolution period so that it may finally work for good and not for evil, and receive in advance the sincere and potent blessings of those whose goodwill will never fail you if you do not fail yourself.
Thank you. Phone number 3530. I believe you have another quote.
Yes. This quote is also from the Book of Quotations for August 14th. It can also be found in the Key to Theosophy, page 231. Universal unity and causation, human solidarity, the law of karma, reincarnation. These are the four links of the golden chain which should bind humanity into one family, one universal brotherhood.
Thank you. SL?
This quotation comes from the final paragraph of The Secret Doctrine, page 797, volume 2. And although it relates to the secret doctrine, we think it also relates to the entire body of her work. Thus far have proceeded the rough outlines of the beliefs and tenets of the archaic earliest races, contained in their hitherto secret scriptural records. But our explanations are by no means complete, nor do they pretend to give out the full text or to have been read by the help of more than three or four keys out of the sevenfold bunch of esoteric interpretation. And even this has only been partially accomplished. The work is too gigantic for any one person to undertake, far more to accomplish. Our main concern was simply to prepare the soil. This we trust we have done. These two volumes only constitute the work of a pioneer who has forced his way into the well-nigh impenetrable jungle of the virgin forests of the land of the occult. A commencement has been made to fell and uproot the deadly upas trees of superstition, prejudice, and conceited ignorance.
Thank you. And from the beginning of the SD, Volume 1, in the preface, you can find this statement. The English tongue is employed because it offers the most widely diffused medium for conveying the truths which it has become her duty to place before the world. And we know that the SD is now translated into many languages around the globe, including her native Russian. But she says this in the preface: these truths are in no sense put forward as a revelation, nor does the author claim the position of a revealer of mystic lore now made public for the first time in world's history. For what is contained in this work, The Secret Doctrine, is to be found scattered throughout thousands of volumes embodying the scriptures of the great Asiatic and early European religions, hidden under glyph and symbol, and hitherto left unnoticed because of this veil. What is now attempted is to gather the oldest tenets together and make of them one harmonious and unbroken whole. The sole advantage which the writer has over her predecessors is that she need not resort to personal speculations and theories. For this work is a partial statement of what she herself has been taught by more advanced students, supplemented in a few details only by the results of her own study and observation. It is needless to explain that this book is not The Secret Doctrine in its entirety, but a select number of fragments of its fundamental tenets, special attention paid to some facts which have been seized upon by various writers and distorted out of all resemblance to truth. Theosophy Hall.
This is from the HPB birthday book, March 28th, and it's also in The Secret Doctrine, Volume 1, page 570. The occult teaching says nothing is created, but is only transformed. Nothing can manifest itself in this universe from a globe down to a vague, rapid thought that was not in the universe already. Everything on the subjective plane is an eternal is, as everything on the objective plane is an ever becoming because transitory.
Thank you. Theosophy Hall again.
Yes, go ahead.
This is also from the key, page 233. In every conceivable case, one must himself be a center of spiritual action, and from him and his own daily individual life must radiate those higher spiritual forces which alone can regenerate his fellow men.
Is there anyone that wants to share by way of a chat? What has come to mind is a quote from The Voice of the Silence on page 37. Thou canst create this day thy chances for thy morrow. In the great journey, causes sown each hour bear each its harvest of effects, for rigid justice rules the world. With mighty sweep of never-erring action, it brings to mortals lives of weal or woe, the karmic progeny of all our former thoughts and deeds. Take then as much as merit hath in store for thee, O thou of patient heart. Be of good cheer and rest content with fate. Such is thy karma. The karma of the cycle of thy births, the destiny of those who, in their pain and sorrow, are born along with thee. Rejoice and weep from life to life, chained to thy previous actions. Act thou for them today, and they will act for thee tomorrow. 'Tis from the bud of renunciation of the self that springeth the sweet fruit of final liberation. The selfish devotee lives to no purpose. The man who does not go through his appointed work in life has lived in vain. If sun thou canst not be, then be the humble planet. Aye, if thou art debarred from flaming like the noonday sun above the snow-capped mount of purity eternal, then choose, O neophyte, a humbler course. Horn out the way, however dimly, and lost among the host, as does the evening star to those who tread their path in darkness. Are there any other selections that anyone would like to share at this time? Well, this certainly is not the end of a cycle this morning, but it is merely a step, one more step, in the proceeding of cycles, many, many, many to come. What Blavatsky was able to create and sustain as the mother and the generator of the Theosophical Society will certainly be claimed by many who seek to plagiarize, perhaps, or seek to personify what they see as the life and the effort of Blavatsky. But it is in the traditional fundamental study of those efforts that she laid down in Isis Unveiled, in The Secret Doctrine, in the Glossary, in The Key to Theosophy, in the many, many, many articles that have been gathered, starting with The Modern Planarian. It's there that we find the thread of how to create our path, how to echo the effort, and then rely on law, cyclic law, that we can do all we can do across time, across duration, to energize the theosophical movement. And that is the heritage of Blavatsky. Have a wonderful day.